FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow-up for Season 12, Episode 49, The Informant. This week we heard Jeremy Witt's police interview, who turns out is the informant and key witness for the prosecution. Bob also broke down how Jeremy's testimony was presented at trial. Janet is back from her assignment, so after a quick break, Bob, Janet, and I are going to dive into your listener questions.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Janet, it's great to have you back from your assignment. I hope everything went well on that important mission that you were on.
Yeah, it was great. I was very excited to listen to the follow-up, and Erica, of course, was fabulous, and I was sorry to miss it, but I feel very caught up because it was great follow-up without me.
Yeah, it was great to have Erica for that particular episode, because we had the whole discussion about DNA and that's
yeah.
What Erica does for a living, but of course, we're glad to have you back, and even you, Zach, we're glad to have here.
I'm glad to be here, Bob. Thank you for having me back.
So I used to tell Mike, you work here, so.
Oh.
All right, so before we get into this episode, I know, Janet, you told me last week because you were like desperately trying to find internet on the ship you were on and you couldn't, but you said that you were particularly upset that you had to miss that follow-up. So was there anything you wanted to add to the conversation about Javier's testimony, or do you want to just move right into this week's stuff?
No, we can move into this week's stuff. Everyone covered everything that I would have brought up. So it was great. It was a great episode, and it was a fantastic follow-up. And there were things in the follow-up that I wouldn't have expected to talk about as much, like the DNA. So it was super informative and really terrific. And this last Sunday's episode was really interesting as well. I'm glad we finally got to Jeremy Witt. We've danced around him a bit, knowing we were coming to him. So I'm really glad that we got into it.
What'd you think about Jeremy Witt's testimony?
I found it utterly preposterous that it would have made it into a trial. I just, for all the reasons that you said, I was sort of dumbfounded. It was worse than I thought it would be, I'll be honest.
Yeah, me too. Like, I knew the background of it, but when I actually got through and like read and actually listened, and the bonus, by the way, the full interview of Jeremy Witt's 2016 interview is now up as a bonus episode. And if you listen to that, it'll even make you even in more nuts. It's awful.
Interview goes off the rails multiple times.
Have you listened to it, the bonus?
Yeah, I was listening to it this morning. He doesn't get anywhere with it.
The weirdest thing is, it's not weird. If you understand, which, you know, I on the surface do a little bit, like just between human behavior and linguistics and stuff, like it's so obvious that the story about Christian's confession didn't happen. It will drive you mad. Because, you know, he says it once and he puts it out. And then for an hour, Bodmer is trying desperately to get him to repeat it and give some details. And you can see that, you know, Bodmer wants so badly for that to be true that he's accepting this bullshit. When we're taught when you're doing interviews and interrogation, like, you know, have them tell it, answer open-ended questions, have them tell it, retell it, see if you can, you know, get them to tell it kind of backwards, you know, in different ways. So you can check for veracity or truthfulness. And Izzy's just like, okay, all right, let's go back. So okay, you're back at the pool and Christian's there. And then he starts yammering on about wanting to go to the gas station and get a beer. And he'll talk about anything but.
Well, and there's the part where Bodmer's like, so he told you he did it? He's like, oh yeah, I didn't say that already. Yeah, he told me he did it. But then, like, doesn't elaborate on, like, what he told him. He just said, oh, yeah, he told me he did it.
Yeah.
If we could leave a little bit of room, I know we're moving on from that, presumably, at least to some degree, next week. But since the episode just dropped, this morning. For me, I only got an alert that it had dropped and was in my feed like 5 minutes before we came on. And I did check Facebook and I saw that in the follow-up, a couple of people had seen that it came through, listened to it, and had a couple of questions. So I'm not going to address those today because I'd love for everyone to have had a chance to hear that interview. And so maybe we can push those to next week.
Yeah.
And folks, if I'll try to remember to do this on the Facebook, but if you are the two people that posted about that, this bonus interview, if you wouldn't mind just copying and pasting your questions so I don't want to overlook them next week when I'm looking at that follow-up post.
Yeah, good idea. Because next week's episode is still related to all this.
Okay,
so
great.
So that'll work good. And I want to, we talked about before the show that you didn't have a direct question about that. I want to give a quick brief synopsis of the timeline of how all of this shook out. So first of all, you have the anonymous call, 2011. In that call, he says that, he overheard Jackie and Lois talking about the raid and they were concerned. He says that he's guessing Christian must have been the one to light the fire. And then Christian joined the mill. And then he says, that's all I know. Jump to 2018. I assume we do have questions about how Bodmer found him and all that.
Yeah.
Bodmer finds him in 2000. They go talk to him, take him down to the station. He gives his interview, and then the arrest happens. Robert and Christian were arrested like 3 weeks after that interview with Witt. That was the catalyst. They had nothing for all those years. They finally arrest him in 2014, drop the charges. They still didn't have enough. There was nothing there. They find Witt. Witt gives a statement. 3 weeks later, they get arrested. They go to trial. So in a pre-trial hearing, so there's like days of hearings that are going on. 3 days prior to Witt testifying, was supposed to be 2 days, 3 days prior to, the defense was given a copy of the transcript, so they knew at that point what the person was saying, but they still didn't have the name at that point. So they didn't know.
I'm sorry, it's a transcript of what?
The transcript of the 2018 interview.
Interview, okay, great.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, so now we have a transcript where this guy is saying that he confessed. We don't know who the person is. And then so then that was day. Then the next day, towards the end of the day, the CI is supposed to come up and testify, but it would have spilled over into the next day. So Aki, the district attorney, or the prosecutor working on the case, said, no, we'll just wait for tomorrow, which, there are obviously people on the defense side are like, that was – they think it was strategic because they didn't want him to start testifying. They know his identity and then have them have time overnight to do more research on him before he comes back. So they wait until so then it becomes now 3 days. So they've had the transcript for 3 days. Witt gets on the stand. So now they know who he is and they're able to quickly do. And I think the defense actually, or the state at that time, disclosed some of his criminal background. And they were able to quickly do some criminal background. You can see that in the cross-examination. Understand in California law, like that part, while it seems really shitty, there wasn't really anything bad done here. They're not required to disclose it for pretrial hearings. The state's not required to disclose. They don't have to give a witness list like you do for trial. So there was nothing really bad done there. I mean, it was clear they waited until the last minute, but the defense during those hearings was making a stink about it with the judge. Like, we didn't have time to, how can we properly cross-examine him when, we've only had 3 days to even work with the transcript? And the judge in the hearing tells them, don't worry, you'll get, if this goes to trial, or I think it was already scheduled for trial, you'll get a chance to cross-examine him then. That's where the issue comes in, is not that they didn't disclose who he was before the pretrial hearing began, but because it was the fact that at trial then they didn't get to cross-examine him, which happened a year and a half later is when I don't remember the date of the pretrial hearing, but a little while later, the trial happens. And then, they're hoping and expecting to be able to, now they've done all this. You can tell obviously from the other witnesses we talked about, like Greg Ellis and all these people, that now they've done a ton of background work. They've talked to people who know him. They have his full background history. And now they're ready to cross-examine him. And they're like, oh, he's not here. They're just, you already got to cross-examine him once, and that's what we're going to use. So that's kind of the rundown of how all of that shook out. And so we'll just get right into the questions.
Sure. I just want to throw out, Valeria mentions in the YouTube chat that I think you said the 2018 interview, and maybe you mean 2016.
Oh, right. Yeah. 2016 interview. Yep. The trial was in 2018.
Okay, cool. I'm going to just jump right in with some very, very key moments that Patrice and Rachel and Sarah, a few different folks pointed out. I'm going to go ahead and read Patrice's version, but the meat of this idea is the same. I think we should get it right out there right away because it definitely stands out. I may have misunderstood the timeline or the location, but was Jeremy Witt saying that Christian confessed to him while they were both working at the water park? I thought the day of the murders was Christian's last day working at the water park. Did investigators ever try to confirm or corroborate Witt's timelines?
Yeah. So remember way back, there were some people that were upset because I said they were suspended and they're like, you're trying to downplay it. They were fired. They weren't fired. They were suspended. What happened was they got like a 3-day suspension and they only had 2 days left of the season that they were working.
Mm-hmm.
Christian went back the following season.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So in 2007, Christian went back and worked at the water park again for the 2007 season.
Gotcha.
And then in early 2008 is when then he finally went to boot camp.
Got it. Great. Thank you for clarifying that. Mary Ellen had asked about the identity when the defense knew. She did ask that kind of specific question. So I'm glad that we were able to clarify that. Just shout out to you, Mary Ellen. Valeria says, how old was Jeremy Witt compared to Robert Christian and the rest?
About 10 years older than him. He was.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. At the time of the murders, Jeremy was 28, I think. And if you listen to his interview, you hear him talking about how it's really weird because he's talking about how, like, I'm 28 years old. I'm not going over to play beer pong or whatever, but then continues to tell stories about how he's hanging out with them after work. But also he's too mature for that. But I did check birthdays. He was 28, I think 29 in 2007. So he's about 10 years older than everybody else.
Wow.
Well, and it sounds like all this is, you know, he's already went off to the Marines and came back. So, I mean, he's clearly older.
Twice.
Yeah. So he's clearly older.
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Garrett asks, with respect to this testimony being allowed, I mean, that definitely shocked a lot of people that mm-hmm. you could just read in something without the opportunity to cross-examine. Garrett says, was the issue of Witt testifying via a recording brought up at the direct appeal? What was the ruling on it? Ridiculous. The judge let that in. Now, you just mentioned that they didn't really technically do anything wrong, right?
Well, because of the pretrial, they did bring it up in direct appeal where they said that 3 days was not enough time to properly prepare for cross-examination. And the judge ruled it was, I'm assuming you have questions about why Jeremy Witt didn't testify.
Yes. That's actually the very next question. So, yeah.
I'll just answer it and then say their name. So what happened? So Jeremy had this whole thing is, and you'll even see in Sunday's episode, like, in my opinion, like, Bodmer is a, like, the worst person that came into this. Like, everybody, a lot of people here have disliked LeClaire. I think LeClaire was not good at his job. But at the end of the day, he knew he didn't have a case against these guys. Bodmer comes in and the cold case unit comes in, and he's like, I'm making a fucking case, is the way I read everything he's doing. They're twisting all this stuff up. So the whole thing around Witt to begin with, but then Witt has new pending charges. He's arrested for the umpteenth time prior to the trial, has pending charges having nothing to do with this case, and uses that to say that he's going to plead the fifth, that he's not going to testify because he doesn't want to incriminate himself because of the other charge, is the way I understand it. Huh? And they allowed that. Okay. Well, he doesn't have to testify because his lawyer's advising him not to speak to because of, you know, as he's pleading the Fifth Amendment. So that was, it was like this nonsense. It didn't make any sense. It had nothing to do with this crime. And I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but to me, like, that would, like, if you could be implicated about something in this crime, you can plead the Fifth, but you coming up to testify about what something somebody said to you about this when you have no connection to it at all, you weren't even in the country when the crime happened. I don't know how that, I can't tell you how that was allowed, but that's what happened.
Well, but didn't you, the impeachment witnesses that the defense brought in were talking about incidences with Jeremy Witt that were also unrelated to this particular crime, right? So maybe it does make sense, because if he was going to sit there and be asked about waving a gun around or whatever, I'm absolutely not quoting directly from what people said, but mm-hmm. maybe there's something to that if you know you're going to be potentially impeached for these other things that you've done that are unrelated, like, you don't want to have to talk about those? I don't know.
In my opinion, it should, like, if that's the case, then his testimony should have been allowed. It shouldn't have been allowed for a lot of reasons. there's no chance in hell Bodmer thought he was telling the truth. And if you can listen to that interview and come away with it like, oh, yeah, Bodmer thought he was straight up. He was a straight shooter. Bullshit. He didn't. He knew he was lying the whole time. And so did Aki, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So can I side rail this for a second? Because I have a question that I really want to ask. And I know I've seen it a couple times now.
Sure.
Who is Lois Robbins? Why haven't we heard from her? Why don't we know anything? Why? I mean, this is a brand new name to me.
Well, I mean, it was described in she was Jackie's roommate.
Well, I'm aware of this, but I'm saying why is this brand new? Why haven't we heard from her? Why is this? Why have they not interviewed her? Why do we not know anything about her? If according to Jeremy knows all this, why are we just now finding out?
Well, because they never interviewed her back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we're going to get into Sunday is now that Jeremy has brought her into it, we're going to hear from her on Sunday. I've met her and interviewed her personally before. But yeah, and then you'll hear in that interview, she's like, nobody ever talked to me before.
That's crazy to me.
Because the night of the murders, Christian, after he dropped Robert off, went home and then went to Jackie's house where mm-hmm. Jackie and Lois lived.
And see, that's crazy to me because that's the only name that he continues to bring up. He brings up Christian Smith and Lois Robbins.
Right.
He doesn't know Jackie's last name. He doesn't know who Robert is. So, yeah. I mean, he's literally giving you a name over and over again in the tip, in the police interview. It just baffles me that we haven't heard from her yet, if that's the case.
Yeah. And I think it's because they were both, like he was, I guess, supervisor of security or something like that. And I think she was also a supervisor, like in a manager. So like, I think he's the only one that she actually knew at the park who happened to be roommates with Jackie. And then Christian had moved in with Jackie and Lois by the time this all occurred.
Okay.
More from her coming.
Okay, great. I want to jump over to Amy. This was a late question, so I texted it to myself, but these are both great. Amy says, if Jeremy asked to remain anonymous, then how is it that this is the question that you asked earlier? If Jeremy asked to remain anonymous, then how is it that the detectives are allowed to find him, much less able to find him? I thought the whole point of that is that those who give tips don't have to worry about giving their info and being found out. And do we know how in the world the detectives did figure it out?
Well, I don't know as far as like if you give an anonymous tip that they're – I don't know that they're not allowed to try to figure out who you are. This is what I know. In March, I think it was March 22nd, Jeremy was arrested for brandishing a weapon, a gun in La Quinta, which is still part of Riverside. I think a few days before that, he was arrested for something in Los Angeles County too. And then shortly before – when we hear that interview, he finally gets bailed out, and he'd been sitting in jail for a while. He gets bailed out, and then after he gets bailed out, all of a sudden Bodmer shows up at his house with Detective Dickey. Actually, there was several officers plus those two, but those are the two that actually talked to him. They go to his house and they confirm with him. They were going to talk more about that in Sunday's episode, but. They go in, they go into his apartment, they talk to him, conveniently didn't record the conversation, neither of them, for 10 or 15 minutes. Then they come out and they go down to the police station and confirm that not only was him on the call, but when I said that was everything I knew, there was one little detail I went out. Christian looked me in the eye Christian stood right next to me and confessed directly to me. Interestingly, they had nothing to work with before. Like what he said in the anonymous call is hearsay. It wouldn't have been like, you can't go on and testify. I overheard her talking to her about something that he said. Like, it's like triple hearsay.
Well, and I had a real high, like hard eye roll through all that too. I mean, you listen to him talk about it and he's like, he didn't say it, but I could read his body language and read between the lines.
And I'm really good at reading body language.
Like that, hard eye roll. Ran off the road.
Yeah. There's a lot of those in the interview. Now, granted, I don't think it was difficult to figure out who he was. And you'll even hear, I think I'll say it now because I don't mention it in Lois's interview. In her interview, you hear them, they're showing pictures. I think they already had an idea because they're showing her, they don't say it, but that's what's happening is they're showing her pictures of the different people that worked at the water park at that time.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, that's Robert. Yep, that's Jackie. And then they show her a few more, and she's like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is. I think Jeremy was one of those pictures. So I think they knew who worked there. And he had told them that he was a Marine. He told them he worked there about that time. So I think they kind of had an idea. And I've heard, it's just theories and stuff. But so who knows? The fact that he was in the Riverside County Jail, then comes out, and all of a sudden they show up. By the way, the charge, he was charged with brandishing, it was displaying or whatever. Basically, he was waving a gun at somebody. After this interview, those charges were reduced to, I can't remember what the charge, but it was reduced to something else. And then he pled not guilty and the prosecution dismissed it. So again, take that for what you will. But the pending charges he had at the time that Bodmer showed up at his house were dismissed after his interview.
Well, I just want to shout out Aaliyah, who sees and felt and feels some similarities. I know we've brought up Adnan's case before. I know we've brought up Jay Wild's case or his involvement in that case before. I, too, felt those vibes a lot. Like if Jeremy had pointed at a motorcycle he was interested in on their way to pick him up a beer, that really would have made it too eerie of a coincidence for words. But Aaliyah says, not a question, but I just have to point out the ridiculousness of two statements made by Witt. Quote, I'd beat his ass in the Marine Corps, followed by, I didn't come forward earlier because I was scared for my safety. We might as well call this guy Jay Wild. Just the idea of sort of the conflicting behaviors around whether he was afraid of him, whether he thought he was a punk, whether he, you know, respected him, whether he had zero respect for him, and the sort of changing stories. And then also, you know, this question of the mystery of potential compensation, whether or not any of that is valid or speaks to the facts of whether Christian confessed or not. It's very fair, I think, for Aaliyah and for many of us to go, God, this feels familiar.
Well, yeah, I mean,
And then being untouched by the cops after that, if that's indeed true, this idea of like, oh, suddenly, no matter what he does, he just never gets in trouble anymore.
Yeah. It's like when he's directly caught on surveillance, like I've interviewed Greg Ellis, the one, you know, personally interviewed him, the one that we heard his testimony. And if you look on the website, he gave a whole bunch of testimony outside of the jury. And then the judge limited what he was allowed to say in front of the jury. So on the website, there's Greg Ellis, no jury, Greg Ellis jury. So you get the full story in the Greg Ellis, no jury. But I mean, they have surveillance footage, cameras, pictures. Like Greg was telling me how frustrated because he's like, the police, we would call the police because he was doing this stuff. And we would show them like, here's a video of him that I took with my phone doing it. Here's pictures of him. Here's this. And just nothing would ever happen to him afterwards. But as far as the contradictions, if you track his, like, there's so many little contradictions in there. It's everything from he wanted to join the Army and I'm telling him you should be a Marine. And then later it's like, well, he was in the Army and I was glad he was in the Army instead of the Marines because he's an embarrassment because he confessed. I'm like, but you didn't – the last time you talked, he didn't confess and you wished that you thought he should be a Marine instead of it. You know, there's little stuff like that all throughout his
– I tried very hard to take him as credible listening to this interview. I went into it with, this is a credible witness. I tried to listen to it that he's completely credible with no bias. And it was hard to, there was some contradictions right off the get-go when he starts talking about it, that he's like, I remember everything. I remember what he was wearing. He was wearing these aviator sunglasses and he goes through this whole spiel and then he's like, but I don't remember what he said to me. But he goes through this whole thing about like, I remember everything. I absolutely remember everything. He was doing this, but then they did it. And that was like it.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's no, like, he literally says, I don't remember what he said, but he told me he did it.
Yeah.
Right.
As I said in the episode, I mean, we're breaking it down, discussing it all here, but like, I had planned to go through all these and play audio do clips and do all the, and as I'm going, I'm like, this is nonsense. Like, I can't even spend the energy. Like, if you can't hear this and figure out what nonsense it is, then you're probably never going to anyway. Right. But there's so, that's why, you know, the episode was what it was, and then I put up 18 documents for on the – like, if you want to read all of it, it's up there. But it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Just to stay on the kind of Jeremy as the anonymous caller, Caroline and Nikki just wanted to confirm. So there is officially no documentation that, like, confirms – or is there that Jeremy was, in fact, that informant? Like, is it documented, or is it just, like, suddenly Bodmer knew and that's – after
well, Witt
fact,
confirms it. So you'll hear that if you listen to the bonus in the beginning of the interview. And when I first heard it, I was like, how do we know this is even him? He could just say, I'm sure it's him. Because people have said, like, the voice doesn't sound the same and this and that. And it may be the case, but listen to the details. He's talking about he's a Marine. He worked security. You know, like what are the odds it was someone else who worked at the park who was in the Marine? You know what I mean? So it was him. He can. So in the interview, and if you listen to the bonus, you know, like I started, first of all, one of the detectives does that thing that a lot of the detectives in this case like to do, which is, I think, rub the microphone against the stubble on their face for 5 minutes when the interview's starting.
Yeah, there's a bunch of...
like completely unaware of the fact that they need that to get the recording.
Yeah.
So that's going on at the beginning. And then they're just playing... They play to him the anonymous phone call for him to confirm if that was him or not. And so where I start that episode, because I cut all that stuff out because it's really hard to listen to, plus you already heard some of it, they shut it off and then Whit says, yep, that's me. That's me. So that's the only documentation we have is him saying that it's him. But for the record, in my opinion, it's definitely him.
Yeah. So let's talk for a second about this idea of the compensation. Valeria points out, you know, when he made that initial call, it was anonymous. So could he have been after the reward money if he didn't identify himself? I saw something similar in some that someone said a while ago in the chat. But I do want to just tag on before you respond that Sarah, in listening, kind of got the impression at the end. Sarah says, Whit seems like he's kind of dancing around a question before saying maybe he will check back in a few weeks to see if it helped. Why? Sarah says, that seemed to me like he may have been trying to, in fact, get the reward money while still staying anonymous initially. What do you think about that, guys?
Well, I think that for the anonymous call, and I got the same, he does say that, you know, maybe I'll call back, I'll check back with you guys in a couple weeks. Keep in mind, when you look through his criminal, like, he had pending charges then, too. Like, this guy has a long rap sheet. He's always in trouble. I don't know what prompted. You know, the reward from the governor for $50,000 came in, I think, 2009. And then there was a private reward where the billboards and all that were put up for another $50,000. I'm not positive when that happened. I think it was around this time because it was around 2011, I think, when Ron Friedley had hired Luis Bolaños and they had put up the billboard and they were like in the press in this campaign, like, this case needs to be solved. The thing is, he didn't give them any real information that they could use. Like to me, the anonymous phone call sounded very much like Bo Nash's interview. We're like genuinely, like, Bo was like genuinely like, hey, like, after this, all of a sudden, suddenly Javier wrecks his car, and then Javier, like he's drinking so much nobody can talk to him, and then he takes off and he moves to Sacramento. Like, this stuff's just like I think Bo genuinely was like, you guys probably need to know this stuff. Right. Well, really, it's not anything that's useful. That's what I got out of this. It's weird that all of a sudden it was prompted years after the fact, where he's just like, oh, I just thought all of a sudden to call you because I saw it on the news. Well, the new what was playing on the news then was about this reward too. But like you said, he stays anonymous. But then he says maybe he'll call back. I'm curious if they did call back or if he just knew that what he had was useless. But I sure would love to know what was said inside of his apartment in those 10, 15 minutes before the 2016 interview, when all of a sudden he's like, yeah, that's me. And you know what? I don't have hearsay anymore. He confessed directly to me. And we see this with how many cases. There's a total of $100,000 of reward money.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know if it was paid out, who it was paid out to. They got a conviction, so it should have been paid out to someone.
Right.
Logic would tell you they didn't have a case against these guys that would stick until 3 days after Whit gives this interview in 2016. That's when they finally get arrested again. So I don't know. I don't know what happened to it. It sure seemed. And I will say this, to be fair, when I've interviewed people that knew Whit, like, not personally, but knew that like lived in the same area as him, and I asked him, did he ever seem like he came into a bunch of money? Nobody said Well, it was only two people, but they said I never noticed anything. Like, I didn't notice him driving a fancy new car or anything like that.
Right. Well, that's something that Amy brought up as well in her kind of little group of questions, was this idea of it potentially being problematic. And I think maybe we've talked about this before, or it was brought up on Undisclosed with respect to Jay, is that the sort of intention of something like Crime Stoppers and the anonymity of it, and knowing that that could be very helpful because someone who is afraid to come forward could maintain that anonymity, but that it's also complicated and potentially difficult, if not very damaging, for a reward to be paid out and for the defense not to have access to that information to explore what a motivation might be and whether or not there could be connections there. And that's something that not only came up for Amy, but also for Sarah and Jeremy shout out to Jeremy W., who was asking questions about Jeremy Witt. And I was like, oh, this could get confusing on the follow up. Jeremy W., Kathy and Leanne asking that question. Any evidence at all? We know, obviously, that there isn't any evidence of them getting specifically getting that leniency, specifically getting that reward money as connects back. In documentation saying, yes, we were lenient on Jeremy Witt because of this, with this other charge or whatever. Would that be so that doesn't fall into Brady, right? I mean, it just that's not really a Brady violation if it's an anonymous tip and gets paid out. Where does that fall in? You know, we should have had access to this information so that we could have explored more who did it and who got the money and why.
That's a good question. It would be a question to be better answered by an attorney, because I don't know, because I think that was one of the things with the undisclosed team they were working on with Jay Wilds getting paid, because he was directly asked on the stand, were you compensated for this?
Right.
Now, Witt was never asked that on the stand because he didn't get on the stand.
Because he couldn't be asked, right.
Yeah. But it seems like that's something that should be disclosed, you know, because that's the problem, right, with these anonymous tips is what you want. So like the Crime Stoppers programs and stuff, they're useful, right? So what you want is somebody who's like, hey, I'm calling in. I know for a fact this guy did it, and he said he threw the murder weapon at this location. And then the police go get the murder, and they have the evidence to go to trial without putting that person on the stand. Like, they give them a tip that will lead them to get their own evidence.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it becomes problematic when it's shit like this, which is, yeah, he confessed to me. Well, now it's a problem because you're supposed to remain anonymous, but I can't just say someone said that. You've got to testify to that if that's what happened, and then the jury has to weigh the credibility out. Because this also, like, from what I was told, I'd never seen a video or anything that they put, like, this very professional. The person that read in the testimony, I was told by people that were there, who admittedly are on the defense side, so that, you know, there's probably some bias there.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, the person reading in the testimony gave credibility to the testimony.
Wow.
Because of instead of having Jeremy Witt sitting up there saying this stuff, there's someone in a suit and tie sitting there very articulately reading out of the testimony. And even though it's not supposed to matter in human, it's human nature. It does matter. That's the information. That information is coming from this man in this suit, this very professional, articulate man in the suit. I believe him. Really, it wasn't him who said it at all. It was Jeremy Witt who said it.
Yeah.
And has a whole different tone.
That's fascinating. The whole Jeremy Witt thing is a fascinating aspect of this case from a legal perspective that I almost wish we could have an attorney come in and just sort of talk about, because there's so many pieces of this that just kind of, you know, whether they're permissible or not, it's just fascinating. Like, I've never heard of that before, this idea of somebody just being able to read, to play the character of the credible Jeremy Witt. It's so interesting. And technically, we said that they couldn't ask about getting any kind of compensation, but that is something that the defense could have asked at the pretrial, right? But it's not in the transcript.
Right. Yeah. They could have asked that. Yeah, but I would assume that if that was the case, that it would have been paid at that point. You know, if it was like you get this money upon a conviction or whatever, or indictment, that maybe, I don't know. I don't know where that falls into the whole chronology of everything.
Yeah, because it seemed, I thought that some Crime Stoppers tips paid if an arrest was made, not a conviction, but if it leads, I feel like I've heard the language. You know, if this information if helpful information leads to an arrest, then that's considered meaningful enough that you could get paid. So
I don't know. And I'm tiptoeing into territory that I don't really understand. So I shouldn't give too many opinions. But I definitely know I've seen in other cases where that carrot was held out to them. Like, you don't get paid until you testify and we get a conviction or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any idea if that's how that would have worked in this. I believe it was for an indictment. Like, if they got an indictment, that it would pay at least the government money. Now, the private money, they could have said 50, and I don't, I'll have to look it up, but it could have been $50,000 upon a conviction, you know, because they're not bound by whatever the state law is in that regard.
Got it. I just want to shout out Dom in the chat, who says, very understandably, Dom says, I'm confused as to why Witt's character or behavior is coming into play when Robert and Christian's didn't seem to matter.
why his character comes into play. Mm-hmm. Robert and Christian's character doesn't come into play either when it comes to the evidence.
But Dom is saying why we seem to be saying that his character and behavior regarding Jeremy matter in this circumstance. Why aren't we putting that same emphasis on Robert and Christian's quote unquote character?
Well, with all due respect, you're not listening. Not you. With Robert and Christian, I'm like, it doesn't matter what type of person they are. If the tangible evidence, the state's expert compared to the drive time, compared to the cell phone sector data shows they couldn't have been there, then it doesn't matter who they were. And when it comes to credibility, I'm not saying I trust them and I don't care what their character says. What I've said is that Robert said what they were doing that night. Years later, we get their cell phone sector data and it confirms everything he said. It has nothing to do with his character. In Jeremy Witt's case, is he a shitty guy? Yeah, but that has, to me, in my opinion, has nothing to do with why I don't believe him. Lots of shitty guys can tell the truth. I don't believe him because he called and said all he knows is that he overheard a conversation. And then years later, while he has pending charges, he says, oh, also, he confessed to me in this nonsense story. And then his charges are dismissed. That has nothing to do with his character. That's not what this is about. Everything we're looking at is what does what people say and do in regards to the case compare to the actual evidence that we have in the case.
Right.
So Jeremy Witt's character doesn't matter either. What matters is that what we see as far as actual tangible things that happened. He said he doesn't know anymore. He gets talked to for if anybody's character's getting called into question here by me, it's Bodmer's, not Jeremy Witt's. I could give a shit about Jeremy Witt's character. When the department has a policy that you use a belt recorder every single time you interview somebody, and that's why we have all this shitty audio of all these interviews every single time, and then suddenly this star witness comes out of fucking nowhere, and you walk in and talk to him for 15 minutes with two officers wearing belt recorders when it's their policy to turn those recorders on every time they interview somebody, and then they come out and go, oops, I guess we forgot to turn them on that time. That's whose character I'm calling into question. And that matters.
Understood. I agreed. I think I'm still interested, and I have not read the transcripts, but I am interested in what the judge allowed with respect to the impeachment witnesses, because the way you talk about it in the episode, it kind of does sound like the judge is like maybe throwing the defense a bone by letting some of that stuff in because they can't cross-examine him. Because the way you described it, it did kind of sound like it was character assassination, less to do. That's why I was saying maybe it did make sense for him to plead the fifth and not testify, although those two things kind of cancel each other out in a way because... Anyway,
yeah.
But yeah, so I agree that like whether or not he was showed someone a gun has very little to do with whether he heard Christian confess to something. So I was curious about that too.
Yeah, and keeping these are two different things. Also, what is allowed for the jury to hear because the jury's job is to assess his credibility. That's their job. My job and our job is to look at the evidence of the case and determine what actually happened here. Was the jury using that to determine his credibility? That was the idea, certainly by the defense. But has nothing to do with us deciding if he's telling the truth or lying based on character. That has nothing to do with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I keep every time you talk about them going in and not recording, I don't know if maybe you said this and I was reading feedback, but it's unfortunately too hard to imagine. Utter speculation on my part. But it's so easy to imagine them being like, well, I got to tell you, buddy, this isn't really going to help. I mean, if he had confessed to you, for example, that would be a different, you know, and then he's like, what if I told you he did confess to me? Like, that's the kind of conversation you would never want anyone to hear, because that just sounds like you're leading a witness. It just sounds like you're like, I mean, if you could say, even if that's not what Bodmer meant, you know, you could see.
Other hypothetical examples are, and... there's a $100,000 reward for any information.
Don't even go there. It's so troubling.
And the reason we are having these hypothetical conversations, because they didn't record the conversation.
Right.
Also, I got really fired up there and just blew about 5 minutes of Sunday's episode where I break all that down. So you can hear me in a much more calm manner explaining that on Sunday. Sorry.
Great. Sarah says, again, just going back to lots of questions that we've kind of already addressed about the leniency shown to Witt, whether or not it directly can be tied to this testimony or not after his participation in some form in the prosecution. But Sarah also asks, what do you know about Witt's military record? Did any of Witt's antisocial activities happen while he was still in the Marines, or does it seem like it occurred after he was discharged?
I don't know. There's some documents that I didn't post because it kind of goes back to that it's none of our business stuff, but he had some issues in the military too. Somebody had said something about him being dishonorably discharged. I was not, from what I've seen, he was honorably discharged twice from the, so he was in, left, and then I think he went back as a reserve and was in. He did have some, there are some incidents that are noted with him, similar type behavior, what we see after he's out when he was in there. He was not in combat. He was like a vehicle operator or something when he was in.
Gotcha. Sarah and I think I'm going to say Chinzia, but it might be Cinzia. It's a beautiful name and I don't want to butcher it. But and Lana or Lana, all kind of bringing back up this idea of alternate suspects and still struggling to understand. And I go there, too, since it is kind of judge by judge, state by state, who decides when that's appropriate, when and not. They're still just kind of struggling with the idea that you have the authority to do this, make this call. And how it doesn't violate the constitutional rights of the defense, the defendant to a defense. And part of that is because we do have so many international listeners. And I saw this in the chat as well. Folks who are trying to wrap their minds around some of the legalities. And Montana pointed out, you know, the fact that it varies from state to state can make it even more confusing. It's tough. It's like, again, you want to sort of have Colin Miller just come in and give a guest episode on breaking all of that down, as if you can even do it in one episode.
Yeah. And from what I've heard, even in California, it's not uncommon to not allow alternate suspects to be presented. To me, in this case, this is, again, my non-lawyer opinion. Like, it seemed very unfair in this case. I think I mentioned it was this episode or the one before. Like, for example, Jacob, right? So the state makes this big deal about their phones being off as indicating they were at the crime scene at the time of the murders. They weren't allowed to, say, put Jacob on the stand and point out that his phone or even have one of the officers or one of the cell phone experts break down his and say the boyfriend she just broke up with, his cell phone was out of service too. And even if the intent wasn't to say, so he did it, to me, what I would want to use that as a strategy for is say, like, you're making this sound like it's the biggest deal in the world that somebody's phone was off. Well, so, like, there's literally the other closest person to this case.
Right.
His phone was also off. Right. Like, for them not to be able to present, it's so difficult. And it's just one of the things that I think is kind of broken with our system. Like, somebody had said, like, in Facebook, like, yeah, but you can't just go up and start making wild accusations against other people. No, you can't do that. But you can't do that in court anyway. But yeah, I think you should be able to put somebody on the stand and say, you know, mention that somebody saw a red truck. This person has a red truck. They're like, to show them, because this case was so circumstantial. I think that's where my issue is. It's such a ridiculous circumstantial case. And then you're not allowed to let the jury even know what other circumstantial evidence there was that could point in a different direction. And then the jury will be, you know, what we always hear is, well, if not them, then who? And whether they say it out loud or not, I think the jury walks away from that. Like,
they want the story. They want a story that makes sense. That's not
everything
this story.
I heard was indicating that these two were involved, and it's not much, but I didn't hear anything that suggests somebody else was involved. And they don't know that they weren't allowed to hear anything else indicating someone else might have been involved.
Right.
Because I think that would have been reasonable doubt. Again, 10 days of deliberations already.
Right.
Like, if you don't think that would have been enough reasonable doubt to say to stop this conviction, if they knew any little thing that, yeah, there are indications that someone else might have been involved. Not that someone else did it, not accusing anyone else, but her boyfriend's phone was also out of service at that time, her ex-boyfriend, you know, the other ex. you know, that could have been enough and they weren't allowed to do it. And I don't understand why, because I didn't go to law school.
Well, I was going to say, and it may not be even like you have to go to law school, but because each state has a Supreme Court, like that legal precedent gets set. Maybe it was set accidentally for a really good reason in a case where someone was wildly accusing people, damaging people's reputations, putting it out there into the world on public record that this person could have done it or this person could have done it. And there wasn't enough evidence and that severely could have damaged someone's reputation. We don't want, like you said, California hates frivolous lawsuits, etc. So if there's a situation in which it really made good common sense to protect other people from being thrown under the bus for no reason, suddenly you have a legal precedent that's set that becomes much more rigid in situations where judges go, well, I need to look, this precedent has been set. And when there are viable alternate suspects, that could end up getting used against cases in which it makes much more sense to be able to give alternate suspects, right?
Yeah, but it definitely was still up in the air because there were arguments before the judge about this. This defense was fighting. So it wasn't like this is a hard and fast rule.
Well, no, but that's not really how that's not always how precedent works. People argue. We've heard cases where someone appeals something and both people are arguing the same case, saying this is the legal precedent that supports their argument. So it's a little more subjective than maybe I made it sound. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's a total tangent. I'm a total law wonk, so I would love to talk about that more.
Well, on that, it's relevant to this is I spoke with one of the attorneys that tried the case for the defense. And he told me, and on the record on an interview, when I said, is there anything you would have done different? And he said, this thing, because apparently I don't remember what it is, but there is a process where they can appeal, they can hold up the trial and appeal that decision. I think it might have been federally. I don't remember the details about it. But he said, I shouldn't have accepted it. I should have appealed that up to another court. The decision to not allow alternate suspects to be mentioned. So just for your information, like one of the defense attorneys, that is a failure that he noted that he thought he made was even though he fought hard for it, when the judge made the decision, they just said okay and just went on with the trial, and he wishes that he hadn't.
Gotcha. I just want to throw out Sarah. I haven't been giving last names because I feel like I want to respect your privacy in case you don't want them listed, but we have a lot of Sarahs. So in fact, we have two different Sarah G's, but one of the Sarah G's said, why would someone manufacturing a confession reference the secondary crime, the arson, instead of the primary crimes, the murders? I thought that was an interesting question. We're still talking about sort of what the motivation would be for any of this.
I have no idea. It's based on, what he saw. And he says his information about the crime comes from news reports. So maybe that's just all he remembered.
Right. And Montana, I see you defending Jeremy in, maybe defending isn't the right word, but I see you using very sound logic in the chat to say, look, if Jeremy called, did not identify himself, and gave the information he had, and then was shocked when the police found him years later, then perhaps his motivation, like you said, Bob, was not about the reward at all. He genuinely thought he was being helpful. He had a memory of the folks in that house freaking out about the fact that their place was raided, as he put it, and that, you know, it was such a vague memory anyway that to me it seems entirely plausible that you could imagine Lois and Jackie being like, that was so intense, and now they're looking for Robert. Like, why are they, like, this is awful. It's very scary when someone comes in and interrupts your space and, like, goes through all of your stuff or whatever, that you can have a conversation about something being traumatic and not have it mean that you all have guilty knowledge that this crime took place.
And I should point out, I think he was telling the truth.
Yeah, great.
In that first phone call, personally,
yes,
that totally sounds like something that would happen. You'll hear in Lois's interview on Sunday, even the turns of phrases he uses, like raided instead of a warrant. Like, I'm sure he heard that conversation.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter if his motivation was wanting to get it, because he did say maybe he'll call back and check. If the reward wasn't paid till somebody was arrested and no one got arrested, why would he think he would be, he could have called it, and then if an arrest was made, he might have called and said, hey, that, who knows? But I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. If he had legitimate information, I think he shared, at least to an extent, something that he really overheard.
Right.
And if the motivation was maybe this will lead to an arrest and I'll get some reward money, that's what it's for.
Right.
My problem is when 5 years later, the story, suddenly there's this unrecorded secret private meeting with the detectives, and he comes out with this whole ridiculous new story. That's where my problem is.
Right. That's actually the end of, for the most part, that's the end of the questions. Joshua and Jennifer, both on Facebook, were sort of talking about this idea of, like, what we've sort of already covered. I'll read Joshua's, but I think we've sort of covered it. But do you find it weird that Witt said, Christian said, quote, things went bad and we had to torch the place, when that's what the state's theory of what happened was? If I remember that correctly, the profile you and Jim came up with was pointed more towards premeditation. Was it public knowledge that the police thought a hike happened and things got out of hand? Or is it possible the investigators let it be known that that was the theory? If not, why do you think Witt would phrase that? Christian allegedly said it in that way. And then Jennifer said, if I may add to your question, Witt quotes Christian saying that in his 2016 interview with the police, not 2011, how much were media reporting on Robert and Christian's intended hike with Becky up the mountain?
I don't know how much they were probably in the arrest in 2014. They probably did some reporting. But as far as like the state's theory about something went wrong, you've got it backwards. Again, since we always talk about Adnan's case, the same thing. People look at the state tried to present Jay's version of events as his version of events corroborated the cell phone evidence. When you track his different interviews and when the police got different information and when they got towers in the wrong location and then fixed it, in reality, they matched his interview to the phone evidence. In this case, it's not that. Well, the police thought something went wrong and they burned the place down. And then Jeremy Witt said the same thing. It's the other way around. Jeremy Witt said that. And since that was literally the only real evidence they had to go at trial, that became their narrative. It had to be their narrative in order for his statement to make it to matter.
Got it. Sorry, I got really sucked into the chat because there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening, including High Watch, who says the third party law was a result of the OJ case. I've always said these guys are doing OJ's time.
It could be the case.
That's a fascinating statement. It's really, really interesting. Great. Let's sideline about that. We'll start our own podcast where we talk about that. And then everybody else, what I have left is just Jess and Angela and Sarah and Lana, asking about Lois. And we know now that we will be hearing more from Lois next week.
Yep. And this week there's going to be, I'm going to be on assignment. We're not going to miss any episodes, but it's spring break here. So I'm going to be taking off shortly after this episode. So I've already done this week's episode with Lois. So there's some commentary for me while I break some things down. And then it's just going to be Lois's interview. So some of you guys I know don't particularly, the audio is pretty good on this. At least you can listen to it. I think it's worthwhile hearing her talk, but she's the next logical step in this. So that's what you're going to hear on Sunday. And then we'll talk more about it in the Friday follow-up. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you in the YouTube chat. And thanks everybody that sent in questions. We appreciate you guys and we'll see you next week.
Thanks everybody.
Bye guys.
Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Kelly Behrens Brink, and all music for the show was created by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by me, and all of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com. where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Viola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found in all forms @BobRuffTruth. Janet can be found @JanetVarney. And Zach is @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. As for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Might have been a little aggressive, but it's there. It's there, Kelly. You have to figure that out on your own. Also, thank you for making me sound great every week. I appreciate it. I was all by myself again. Forgot my hat today. So, yeah, everybody can see my bald head on Patreon. Almost bald head on Patreon. It's actually not bald. It's clear. I have clear hair. Just so everybody's aware. I was just informing everybody, Bob, that I'm not balding. I have clear hair. Clear. It's clear. Looks very nice. Janet, your hair looks different from last week. Much lighter colored.
I think he's trying to make
sure. Well, last week I was gone.
Different woman. Where were we?
Thoroughly disappointed.
Okay. We're good at this, guys. You see, we shouldn't be doing this on YouTube live. Because
you're going to teach a class about this? Fuck.
Now you guys see that when you hear the cleaned up audio that this is what really goes on. Here we go.